These are murky times for Romania. 3 months away from a rerun of December's controversial presidential election came this.
To spare Romania and the Romanian citizens from this crisis, from this unnecessary and negative evolution, I resign from the position of President of Romania. I will leave office the day after tomorrow, February the 12th. May God bless Romania.
A reminder then about how we got here. Back in December, this guy, Calin Georgescu, shocked everyone by coming from nowhere to win the first round of the presidential election. A pro-Kremlin, ultra-nationalist, he denies any links with Russia. But just days before the second round, the country's top court said the election was null and void, citing foreign interference in the first round.
We shall continue in the democratic manner. I ask very clear for peace, for all the things which we have to recuperate our democracy, because the democracy was cancelled with the court.
Klaus Johannes said he'd stay on until the election could be rerun in May. But that sparked scenes like this. Not only because of his role in cancelling the election, but also questions over whether he could legally stay on. Opponents saying it was only allowed in times of war or catastrophe. This week, Romania's far-right parties, which account for 35% of the seats in parliament, plan to bring forward a vote to impeach him, a vote which threatened to pass with some support from pro-EU parties. But in the end, he jumped before he was pushed. Instead, the Senate's Speaker will now become caretaker president with limited powers until May. But this is another sign of the far-right flexing its ever-growing muscles within European democracy. Paul Hawkins, TRT World.
All right, so my first conversation with our guest today, we talked about J.D. Vance's speech to the Munich Security Conference. And in that speech, J.D. Vance referred to a situation in Romania, which honestly I knew nothing about until he said it in the speech. We've had so many things happening in our country, and I'm sure you noticed that too, that we've been absorbed in our own situation and rejoicing and enjoying the changes. Nothing wrong with that. But meanwhile, people across the world are having difficulty. And a lot of it is stemming from what happens between those leaders in that room at the Munich Security Conference. J.D. Vance took them on and confronted them. And we're going to have a second discussion with Paul Courier today on specifically on Romania and then the broader perspective of what's going to be happening in Europe and these other countries where there is a conservative backlash. What does the future hold for them? I want to remind you, if you didn't tune in to our first conversation with Paul, he serves as a research professor at the Institute of World Politics in Washington, D.C. He also was an associate professor at the French Army's equivalent of West Point. He's also a non-resident senior fellow at Italia Atlantica, which is a think tank based in Rome, Italy. And his interests are all over, and he has connections all over. I learn a lot from Paul. He helps me to understand the world even more. And, of course, with my experience living abroad and traveling the way I have, it's fascinating. And the world is such a smaller place than it once was. I'm sure you will agree. Paul's research interests also include Russia and China and Latin America. When last we actually spent some time together, we were discussing Venezuela. We did a long, lengthy conversations, not on the gangs that have infiltrated our country. It was before that. It was in Venezuela was fighting for its life and all the political machinations. It was fascinating when we got into that. And so that's what I last discussed with Paul. Paul, by the way, graduated from Yale and London, the London School of Economics and Political Science. And he's also a very strong believer in Christ. So his qualifications are unique for a discussion like this and perfect from my perspective to bring perspective to what's happening in the world. Well, before we have that conversation with Paul, I want to remind you, you know that you can call us and we'd love hearing from you at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us always at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. You can find us on your favorite social media platform. You just can. Look for Sandy Rios 24/7, and you can find the show. You can find comments and other things, and you can just enjoy it that way. Plus, you can find the podcast on any podcast platform. AFR.net is our home base, but you can find it on Spotify or Amazon or Apple, whatever you like to use. You can also go to sandyrios.com. That's the website, and you can listen to the show every day on that, too, and plus see some pictures and maybe enjoy more information about the show. You know, babies need our help right now. The news has been moving so fast that it's really hard to keep up, and it's easy to get distracted. But here's something you don't think about or hear about much, and it matters really more than almost anything. There are babies in their mom's wombs who need our help right now. Preborn's network of clinics are on the front lines nationwide on standby for women deciding between the life of their babies. Preborn seeks these women out to help them choose life, not just for their babies, but for themselves. By introducing these hurting women to the life growing inside of them, they are twice as likely to choose life. You see, the heartbeat changes everything. That precious heartbeat that says, I'm alive. I'm alive. I'm yours. I'm your baby. It just is exciting, I can tell you, as a mom to listen to it. Today, would you be the voice for that little baby and become a monthly donor? $28 a month could be the difference between the life and death of so many lives. To donate securely, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. So to remind you in today's discussion with Paul, which is part two, I hope you'll listen to part one also with Paul Courier. We actually do now address the situation in Romania, which is what Vice President J.D. Vance alluded to. It's fascinating. That's not all we'll talk about. That's what we're going to start with. So as soon as we take you hear the music here, you're going to hear kind of what he did say to the people, the leaders present at that Munich Security Conference in that room about Romania when he actually confronted them. And then you'll hear the voice of Paul Courier and me, a pivot to the discussion of what actually happened there. So stay tuned. Here we go.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
We gather at this conference, of course, to discuss security. And normally, we mean threats to our external security. I see many great military leaders gathered here today. But while the Trump administration is very concerned with European security and believes that we can come to a reasonable settlement between Russia and Ukraine, and we also believe that it's important in the coming years for Europe to step up in a big way to provide for its own defense, the threat that I worry the most about vis-a-vis Europe is not Russia, it's not China, it's not any other external actor. And what I worry about is the threat from within, the retreat of Europe from some of its most fundamental values, values shared with the United States of America. Now, I was struck that a former European commissioner went on television recently and sounded delighted that the Romanian government had just annulled an entire election. He warned that if things don't go to plan, the very same thing could happen in Germany too. Now, these cavalier statements are shocking to American ears. For years, we've been told that everything we fund and support is in the name of our shared democratic values. Everything from our Ukraine policy to digital censorship is billed as a defense of democracy. But when we see European courts canceling elections and senior officials threatening to cancel others, we ought to ask whether we're holding ourselves to an appropriately high standard. And I say ourselves because I fundamentally believe that we are on the same team. We must do more than talk about democratic values. We must live them.
All right, so that was J.D. Vance's warning to the Munich Security Conference. on the issue in Romania. And today we get into that with Paul. Before I actually bring Paul back in for the second part of our discussion, there's another clip I want you to hear because it really goes in and interviews the people of Romania and gives you just a little bit more insight into the situation there. And as soon as the clip is finished, you'll hear Paul and me pick up our discussion.
Mirela Onofrai sells flowers on her stand here in downtown Bucharest and is one of millions of people in Romania who voted for the far-right, anti-EU, pro-Russia candidate in the first round of Romania's now cancelled presidential elections.
We have no money for bills. They've sold everything they could from Romania. They don't want to leave power. They've invented some lies that Russia is behind him. In fact, they are lies because the people know he's a fair man.
It was this man, Calin Georgescu, who she hoped would turn the political tides in Romania. He arrived here at a polling station at the weekend in protest. After the second round, he'd hoped to contest, was cancelled by the Constitutional Court. It cited evidence of meddling on social media channels like TikTok to promote his videos. Georgescu denies Russia was supporting his campaigns. He often says he's fighting for what he calls peasant farmers, people like Petri Tocu, who comes into the city market from the rural countryside north of Bucharest to sell his organic farm produce. But Petri didn't vote for him.
Why? Because he has some very strange things that the ordinary citizen cannot grasp.
Petri says the economic situation in Romania for small businesses is increasingly challenging.
There may be many different opinions here in Romania about exactly what happened to see the elections annulled. But the reality is that to some extent, that's going to have to be put aside. The country needs to hold new elections, and they're going to have to find a way to do that.
After the cancellation of the election, Romanian police raided a number of properties owned by people they suspect were involved in schemes to artificially augment Georgescu's online reach. Experts say Romania's institutions must work tirelessly to prevent meddling when the elections are held again.
I do not think that the Romanians are so naive to repeat this kind of situation, that we are able to learn from this experience and to have a true democratic debate and free and fair competition.
There is a chance Georgescu will not be permitted to run again. And back on her flower stall, Mirela says that would be proof that her democratic right is being taken away.
When the next elections will be held, I will still vote for Calin Georgescu. Still Calin Georgescu.
Fresh elections are now due to be held here in the Romanian spring as early as March or April.
When Vance mentioned Romania in the speech, honestly, Paul, I knew nothing about what had happened because we've had so much happening in our country. But what happened? What, it's been now 3 weeks maybe? And Romania, what happened and why was he addressing that in that speech?
Yeah. So a brief version is back in November, they had a first round, what was to be the first round of alleged two rounds of presidential elections in Romania. There was a gentleman named Calin Georgescu who kind of came out of nowhere. He had had positions, official positions before, but he wasn't part of what you and I might call their swamp. Bucharest, just like all of the capitals in Europe, has political leaders and, you know, economic elites that are very tied in with what Brussels does, are very tied in with what the American left thinks and tries to do here. And when those elites are challenged, they really, frankly, have a hissy fit, to just be blunt about it, which is what we're seeing in the wake of Vance's speech. So in Romania, the first round of the presidential election was won by, I think, 23% of the vote, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in a multi-candidate election, it is a lot, by a gentleman named Calin Georgescu. Georgescu is someone who is very independently minded. He says he is not in favor of abandoning Ukraine, but he is not in favor of going to war with Russia either. He says, I'm in favor of Romania and the Romanian people. Now, the Romanian people, just to give you a sense of the cultural zeitgeist in Romania right now, it's very, very similar to what it has been in the United States for the past 4 years and through much of the rest of Europe, where the populace as a whole realizes that their ruling elites don't wish them well and do not have their best interests in heart. So the Romanian population over the last several years, if you Google it, you'll see several times when there have been hundreds of thousands of people in some of the main squares in Bucharest protesting the corruption of their elites, protesting various things related to that. They don't think their elites have their best interests in heart, and they're right. So there was a candidate who was female. I've forgotten her name right now. She was very pro-Brussels, pro-left-wing, pro-EU, not in a good way. When I say pro-EU, I don't mean, as I know you know, I don't mean that she's pro-freedom and democracy and free speech and the things that EU claims they stand for but don't. Pro-EU meaning she was for suppressing anybody who went against the status quo, all the other things that we know the EU actually stands for, unfortunately. And Calin Georgescu got 23% of the vote, and polls show that he was likely to win by a 2-1 margin in the runoff, which was going to be between him and that female candidate, whose name I can't remember. So what happened was the Constitutional Court in Bucharest, made up of justices who belong to that left wing in Romania and that cultural and ruling elite, ruled that he was basically a Russian stooge, and that his numbers were juiced in their view by TikTok, and that somehow they didn't have proof, but the vague allegation was that somehow Putin had juiced this guy's numbers on TikTok, which made him popular. I have a lot of friends spread throughout the Romanian bureaucracy and journalism who are really solid people. They cannot stand Russia. So these are not pro-Russian people at all. They hate Russia because they've had long historical experience with the Russians, with Russian imperialism, whether it's the Soviets or whatever else. So they do not have any affinities for Putin or Russia. And they said that the charges that Putin was somehow interfering was probably not true at all. And even if there was any truth of the margin, it was so minuscule in Russia's ability to move the needle that it had nothing to do with the outcome of the election. So that's what Vance said and addressed when he said, if your democracy, speaking of Romania's, is so fragile that allegedly a few hundred thousand dollars in spending by Russia on social media can tank it, then you've got bigger problems. And he was right. And so what happened now, the election was canceled. The Romanian people feel like they have had their democracy stolen from them, and they're right. They feel like there was a coup, and they're right. What happened was Klaus Iohannis, the incumbent president of Romania, he's viewed as being a very corrupt elite by the Romanian people. He basically kept power in the presidency beyond his mandate until sometime last week. And now there's an interim president who has come in, who's also part of that same corrupt ecosystem, from what my friends tell me, who has been president of the Romanian Senate. Now he's the interim president of Romania until they can have, an election. It's an open question about whether or not they will allow Georgescu to run again in that election. Probably not, because they're afraid of him. If he comes in, he has promised to do basically what Trump promised to do and is doing here, take on the corrupt vested interests in the Romanian bureaucracy, do the same thing in Brussels. Romania is not necessarily going to leave the EU, but he says, I'm going to stand for the interests of the Romanian people. We're going to root out corruption, and we are going to be a transparent government and rule in and govern in favor of Romania's national interests. That's what the elites over there find so threatening, and that's why it was canceled. And so now Romania is a seething pot ready to boil over, because the popular distaste and frustration with the ruling elites, which have just canceled democracy, basically, is at a boiling point. So Romania is it's a very troubled spot right now. And if we're talking about the effectiveness of NATO, that southeast flank of NATO on the Black Sea, Romania might be a small country, but it's important. We're building now the biggest NATO base, I think, in history. It's going to be 50% bigger than Ramstein in Germany. Huge. Wow. And that's going to be in Romania. So Romania is important strategically and in many other reasons, even though it's small. So we need to make sure that we get it right there, and we're not doing that right now. Romanians are really frustrated, and we actually could see some major street protests and possibly even revolution over there.
You know, I was just thinking how ironic Ceausescu was their prime minister, premier, whatever he was, during the Soviet Union days. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the most brutal, I know you know this, but I'm telling the audience, one of the most brutal dictators in the Soviet bloc. And I remember Joseph and Elizabeth Son he was a leader in the Christian church. Well, they came to, I was in Wheaton at the time. This is before I even started on radio, Paul. It's a long time ago. And I remember sitting next to Elizabeth and Joseph in a room, just there were maybe half a dozen of us. and they had just come, and they talked about they thought they were going to be killed, and Elizabeth talked about how she had to choose someone to take her baby. It was so emotional. I will never forget it. My point is that here they are in Romania. They suffered so horribly under the brutality of the Soviet Union and the whole Russian, hub, I guess you would say. So if they were told that this guy, Colin Georgescu, was, a handpicked by Russia, and they didn't believe it, and they voted for him and would have 2-1 in the runoff, that speaks volumes. The people are not stupid. You know, they lived under that oppression. Right. Yeah, so it's, and isn't it ironic, Paul, that the very people, like the German leaders, who are claiming that they're acting out of their experience in World War II, and they don't, let me just read, actually, I'll read, it's Chancellor Olaf Scholz, German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's comments. He said, they have a commitment to never again return to fascism and the Holocaust. And so they're claiming that they're trying to keep away from fascism when they are the ones who are becoming fascists.
That's exactly right. It's amazing how you can think of yourself, and I think they really are self-deluded to the extent that they believe this, that you can think of yourself in such a way as a ruling elite in Germany, whether it's Olaf Scholz or whomever else, and think that we are defending against the reinvigoration of fascism in Europe by ourselves being authoritarian. I mean, how do you define fascism, I guess, is what it comes down to. I think the Europeans and the leftists that run Germany and other countries maybe in their own minds have defined fascism as only being anything that smacks of being, quote, right-wing or conservative. Now, that gets into labels, and I think you were right when you said earlier you wouldn't necessarily use the label conservative about this uprising we see in this cultural awakening in the U.S. and across the West. I mean, you and I might use it as shorthand because you and I know what we mean by the word conservative, but labels can be overused and maybe of limited utility. I think it's more of a just both a spiritual and a political awakening, whatever label you want to put on it, that is anti-authoritarian, that is anti-governing elite, that wants to empower individual people of the grassroots and have citizens that actually are in charge of their own destiny. Now, if that isn't an articulation of a system of self-government, I don't know what is. And if that is threatening to the ruling elites in Europe, then they really need to get out of their positions because they are not defenders of any sort of system of self-government and any sort of system that would empower citizens.
But Paul, if they continue to, like they have an election coming up in Germany, I think it's February the 23rd, and they have a so-called far-right challenge to their current, what's her name, Alice Weidel. And J.D. Vance actually had the audacity to meet with her. Okay, so there's this election coming up in 2 weeks. Did they not hint at even interfering with that one, or was that a speculation?
They did. No, they did. They actually overtly said that. That's right.
Okay, so
Ever heard Alice Weidel speak, she is incredibly articulate, and that's one of the reasons why they can't stand her. She is incredibly articulate. She doesn't come across as an extremist, nor do I think is she an extremist. And she is also lesbian and married to her partner, so it's not like they can accuse her of being some sort of a quote-unquote Christian nationalist or something like that. So I think that's partly why she is a threat as well, is because of who she is and how articulate and intelligent she is.
That's kind of an illustration, too, of why what's happening in this country and other countries is not necessarily conservative in our definition.
Correct.
Which means it also translates to moral values. So I think that that's why we need to be careful when we define this. Okay. So
that's right.
But if these leaders are going to, call all these elections and pull the strings that they can pull and stop conservative candidates, like Viktor Orban is, the brunt of their wrath all the time because he is that and he was elected. How can that be stopped? Did Vance's speech do anything to advance stopping that in any way, exposing it?
It certainly exposed it. Those are two different questions. Did he expose it? Number one, yes. Did the speech make any advances on stopping that? That remains to be seen. I mean, right now they are in circle the wagons mode, to use an old American West, you know, allusion. They are circling the wagons because they feel like they need to be defensive because they're being attacked, and they are, justifiably so. So he exposed it, yes. And I know that many, many millions of Europeans are cheering that on, that finally somebody was able to go and speak the truth, you know, to use that phrase that the left loves, to speak truth to power. And he did that. So whether or not that makes any positive difference in causing them to dismantle their mechanisms of suppression, which is basically what they have built over there, that remains to be seen. I think they're going to fight tooth and nail not to do that. I was on the phone with a close British ally of mine just before you and I got on the phone together, and he said the point that I made earlier in your and my talk, that NATO's said about 70% of NATO's budget is, you know, is funded by the United States, and 90 to 95% of its logistic and other capabilities are enabled by the American military, and we need to fully use that leverage in order to force changes. Otherwise, there will not be any changes. I'm firmly of a conviction that these European leaders will never see the light. They will only feel the heat. So we've got to bring the heat.
Well, and so that's what we're doing. I have a few more questions, if you don't mind, before we say goodbye here this morning.
Sure.
I'm wondering why in the world, one of the issues that came up, of course, was funding for Ukraine. And Europe has been all in for that. And at every turn, Russia is the villain. Now, there isn't that much of a line between the historical actions of Ukraine and the historical actions of Russia. They're neither of them can be proud of their totalitarian, corrupt history. So apart from the obvious, why is Europe so all in for Ukraine?
That's a complicated question, and I think it differs depending on which PowerPoint and base you're talking about in Europe. There are some things that I just can't talk about on the air that I'm privy to, that, again, I just can't go there, that get to the crux of why the Europeans are supporting them. I can tell you, then this is public knowledge, that the Europeans and the State Department under Joe Biden as well were pushing Ukraine toward social progressive causes as well. They basically told Kiev, we're going to fund you and give you what you need and make sure you prevail. But in exchange for that, you need to become part of the West. And that is defined not as you and I would define it, free speech, freedom of conscience, those sorts of things, but defined as advancing, gender ideology, advancing those sorts of left-leaning causes that the State Department under Biden and USAID under Biden and Brussels and Soros have backed so strongly. So that's part of it. I think you saw that when you saw that guy that tried to assassinate Trump down in Florida on the second assassination attempt. There are videos that came out afterward of him, wearing a Ukrainian flag, saying that the Ukrainian flight was all about gay rights, which is kind of absurd. But that's kind of how the thinking goes. So part of it is that. Part of it, in the hard power point of view, is critical minerals and natural resources. Ukraine has loads and loads of critical minerals and other natural resources. Russia wants them, the West wants them, and the part of this is a fight over those. So the land that Russia has taken has a large percentage, a minority still, but a large minority of these Ukrainian critical minerals deposits and other natural resources. And that's going to be very beneficial to Russia if Russia can keep them. Likewise, those that remain in Ukrainian hands, Western sources, entities, governments, and private corporations are looking at using those. Now, if we in the West can use them for good purposes, I'm all for that. If not, then not so much. But that's part of it as well. It's just those practical power, hard power considerations, critical minerals, natural resources, and other things that Ukraine has in spades.
Well, that's the first part of today's discussion. And actually, when Paul mentions the whole notion of these Western radical left European leaders transmitting their values to Ukraine and using it, bribing them, giving them money to carry water for transgenderism, doesn't that just sound like right? It sounds like what Biden was doing. It's so perverse. And that's what he's describing. And that really made me think of some things I had experienced myself or seen when I was in Russia, when I've covered it through the years. And we're going to come back to that. My response to his statement about that and on the minerals, we'll start with that after this short break. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
As abortion continues to rise, Preborn is expanding their life-affirming care in the darkest corners of our nation to help more hurting women and save more babies. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $15,000 will place an ultrasound machine in a needy women's center, saving countless lives for years to come. To donate, just go to preborn.com/Sandy, and if you don't have $15,000, of course, whatever you can give will go to help Preborn and the moms. Go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Two things come to my mind. You know, that whole thing about the sexuality, the LGBTQ movement and wokeness, whatever. Ironically, Vladimir Putin has been so opposed to all of that. And I can see, never thought of that before, why this would be a thing that the Europeans would embrace. I mean, apart from all the other reasons that they are so opposed to Russia also for that. That is irony. I can't think of any other word to use. That's so ironic. Yeah. I could see that. The other thing that comes to my mind is, you remember when the Soviet Union broke up, the oligarchs were able to sell the rich minerals and treasures that Russia had and enrich themselves because there was such chaos at the time. Nobody was minding the store. So this is complicated. When you say this is complicated, it's complicated. And I don't think... I would love to know what you think, Paul. When I look at Russia and Ukraine, I see the good citizens. I've been in Russia also, and you know, the people are wonderful. Mm-hmm. I remember being there before the Soviet Union broke up. Just fine, wonderful people who want to be free. And then I think the same thing of Ukraine. But leadership, they're both corrupt. I don't see Zelensky as the good guy versus, you know, the mean old Putin who wants to invade. I just don't think it's that clean and clear. And I just would love to know where the lines are in your own mind with that.
Yeah, that's another issue where I can only discuss certain things. But in short, I would agree with you that it is. It requires more moral nuance and more ability to see that there's a world of gray out there than just pure black and white, meaning Russia is pure evil and, you know, Ukraine and the West is pure light. It reminds me of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who I know you know who he is and was, and a lot of our listeners will as well. But the Soviet dissident, who was just a very deep thinker, and I know his son, who's an orchestral conductor, a great guy. Solzhenitsyn said, the line between good and evil and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact verb, is the line between good and evil doesn't run between countries or between even individuals, but it runs down the middle of countries and societies and within each of us individually. And he's right. And that, of course, anyone who believes in the Christian tenet of, you know, of original sin and of sin separating us from God and twisting our nature from what, you know, God created it to be, you will understand that any political system, any economic system, any human endeavor is going to be characterized by that same dissonance, because the dissonance comes from within ourselves, as Paul writes in Romans chapter 7. I think that's the way to view Russia and Ukraine, is in those theological terms, which help you to understand, you know, a bit about the geopolitics, is that things, you're right, things are messy. They're not clean. They're seldom, if ever, clear-cut. And, you know, we're facing the same here. So part, I think, what Christians can do as they approach politics in domestically as well as internationally is to make prudential judgments. And what I mean by that is look at the totality of the evidence that they see. And at the end of the day, we are called to make what I would call prudential judgments, which means estimating where the balance is and where they can help the most. And where they need to be involved to make a positive difference and be the hands and feet of Christ. In this case, it's very, I mean, there are some clear evils. Yes, the Ukrainian people have suffered greatly, and that is an evil. And the Russians have also suffered under Putin's rule for various reasons. But we need to, if we're going to make Ukraine an ally, if the West is, we need to push things not like gender ideology, obviously. We need to push things like actual freedom of religion, like actual freedom of speech, like free and fair elections, like so many other things. And Ukraine needs to be built up to be a political system that really is an exemplar of what of strong citizens. And Ukrainians want to be strong citizens, as you know. They want to have a say in the governing their country and their local communities, and they're very capable people. But we need to champion that and not so much some of these left-wing causes we're championing.
All right, one last question. And that is just the general question of what in the world is going to happen in these areas, like Germany having this election on February the 23rd, following this speech and all the disruption of it, Romania getting ready to have this other election, and it's probably in worse shape than, as bad a shape as Germany. And then we have England. Well, Nigel Farage is rising amazingly. England is in such turmoil. What, any predictions for where this is all going?
If I could predict accurately, I would set up a company where I would predict the future and I would be a billionaire by May or June.
Well, go ahead.
It's really hard to do. I mean, a lot of this depends. So let's take it one by one. The three countries you mentioned, the UK, Germany, and Romania. In the UK, you know, I have friends that were, you know, very senior people in the Tory party. I'm also, you know, friends with a lot of the team around Nigel Farage. And, as you know, I hosted a private reception for him and his team just before the inauguration in D.C. He is rising in popularity, and that is because, as you've intimated, because the British people as a whole are tired of the same trajectory culturally and politically as we're seeing throughout the whole of the continent. And there's going to be huge backlash. Now, whether that leads to Farage actually winning a majority in some future general election, which, you know, it doesn't need to be called anytime in the next 3 or 4 years, but whether that leads to him taking over is a really open question, and there's so many moving parts politically and culturally and economically right now in the UK, it's impossible to predict, because anything can happen in 3 to 4 years. I mean, a week is an eternity in politics, much less 3 to 4 years. So moving to Germany, that's nearer term. That's less than a week from now is that election. I mean, AfD is situated well from everything I see. I think Vance's speech is going to energize AfD supporters. And whether how that impacts people that are on the margins or on the fence, so to speak, about AfD or some other party and don't know how they'll vote, I'm really not sure. I don't have my finger to the pulse of the German populace to the degree that I can, you know, confidently say. So I'm really not sure what's going to happen. In Romania, I know that, as I mentioned before, the Romanian populace is just seething with resentment against their cultural elites. And that resentment has been growing over the course of quite a number of years, as the corruption is so obvious over there. and the self-interest among the ruling elites. What's going to happen there? It depends on whether or not the elites allow Georgescu to run. That's very unlikely to be the case. I would guess he will not be allowed to run, that the ruling elites see him as too big of a threat, and they will say, we will risk potential revolution and gamble that we can keep a lid on things and continue to suppress our people's desires because Georgescu is too big of a threat to allow him to run, because if we allow him to run, he will win. So we're going to have to come up with somebody else. Who that somebody else is, I do not know, but that would be the best I can give you in terms of a prediction on Romania.
Yeah, things don't always turn out the way we hope, like in Venezuela. I mean, but that's the last time think we really did do a long interview, and it didn't turn out well. And they were great leaders, and they ended up getting arrested, people who stood up, you know. So we just have to pray. I think the missing link here, Paul, is that we are going through a political revolution. Yes, we are. But we are not yet going through a spiritual revival. I think there are hints of it, touches of it, but really that's the only thing that's going to sort this out. And that's what I'm praying for. In our country
that's
and
exactly
in,
right.
in the world, too. Paul, it's just such
that's
a
right.
pleasure to talk to you. Where can I direct people to access the things that you write?
I'm not publishing anything anymore because I'm too busy doing, quite frankly, behind the scenes. I'm not spending a lot of time writing. I did a book 4 years ago, I think, on the ethics of nationalism that came out in Italian. So if any of our readers or listeners read Italian, they can look that up. And I'm doing another book right now on the history of Polish-American relations, which is going to be it's going to take a while to get through. But I'm emphasizing certain conservative aspects. I'm not labeling conservative aspects that underpin our respective cultures that make us have certain commonalities that cause us to feel like we're cousins, so to speak. I would see the Polish-American relationship as another special relationship. But that's not something I'm writing in article form. I guess they can follow me just by Googling me. Occasionally I'll come up with, I do media interviews. I did one with German national media about a month and a half ago. On the issue of Trump coming into power and what the future looked like for German-U.S. relations.
I
raised
I wish
a lot
I could
of the
have
same
been
issues
there.
That Vice President Vance did. They interviewed me for 3 hours on that issue, then another 3 hours on the China-Germany-U.S. triangle, which was equally interesting. And so I do occasional interviews like that, but I'm not really publishing articles right now.
All right. Well, when you do the ethics of the history of Polish-American race, oh, no, history of Polish-American relations. I would really,
yes.
You got to call me, because I would love to do that interview with you, Paul. So remember that.
Yeah.
All right, thank you. I mean, thank you. You're just a wealth of knowledge, and I just appreciate your time so much, Paul. So.
And I enjoy talking to you every time we get a chance to do so. So thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Thanks so much. Well, Paul Coyer, again, the research professor at the Institute of World Politics in D.C., and a whole bunch of other things. Well, we have a lot to pray about, don't we? From what's happening inside our country to what's happening across the globe. And Christians can always, have to, and I'm a Christian, and so I'm talking to a lot of Christians. Some of you may not be that, or maybe a different definition, but those of us that are serious about our faith have serious work to do to try to understand and bring God's perspective to what's happening in the world and sort of help to reinstitute and establish God's ways, not only in government, but also in our private lives. Well, I really do appreciate you listening today. I hope you enjoyed it. I bet you did. And I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because they let you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.